This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to another episode of Echoes of Dissent, a weekly podcast that explores the events, the movements, the beliefs and the personalities. In short, the why a song of protest, a song of dissent was written and sung, and who created it. We look at its impact at the time and its relevance to today, if any.
My name is Frank Carter, and today we interrupt this broadcast with breaking news. We're actually broadcasting live from Pack and Save, where a busload of tourists has arrived, unannounced, and has begun to what shoppers are describing as some kind of guided tour. About 20 visitors, camera and phones are already out. Their guide says she's originally from Cinder Hill, and she's been leading the tourists up and down the aisles, narrating what she's calling typical household provisioning patterns, as if the people in the supermarket, the customers, are doing some kind of ritual. One visitor has just spent a good 10 seconds photographing a woman's trolley with all the goods in it before the customer noticed. And the shopper is clearly not amused and has turned away quite briskly, pushing her trolley back the other way up the aisle. I'm here for my groceries, she exclaimed, not to be photographed like a zoo animal by some out-of-town stranger. Going across to the deli counter, a staff member was stopped mid-serve and asked on camera, a staff member serving a customer and someone comes in and says, one of these tourists comes in and says, on camera, asks how it feels working inside. And this is a quote directly from this tourist. Such an abundant food environment. Like all the staff at Pack and Save, the deli assistant was puzzled by what is happening, but handled it all very courteously. She explained, look, it's Tuesday. I'm doing the salami at the moment and just serving this customer. Over at near checkout 6, a visitor is asking the operator to repeat the barcode beep for the camera, while the queue backs up behind her. The checkout operator was polite, but very clear. I need you to stand behind the line, please. And the guide sent to the Cinder Hill tourist operator has just asked a bystander why people wheel the trolleys out to the cars. Can't they carry the bags themselves? Store management has just arrived and is attempting very diplomatically and very calmly, very politely, to explain that this is a supermarket where people buy food. It is not a tourist attraction. Look, full marks to all the staff for the calm and polite way they handled this unexpected intrusion. The tourists are now getting back on the bus, and customers are beginning to come back into the aisles after hiding and sheltering behind shelves and displays. We understand the group's next stop is apparently a nearby McDonald's, billed on their printed itinerary as an authentic fast casual dining ritual. Look, we'll go to our music break now, but we'll come back and we'll continue monitoring the situation after our break.
She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College, that's where I loaded. I said my case of rum, Coca-Cola, she said fine. And then in 30 seconds time, she said, I wanna live like common people. I wanna do whatever common people do. Wanna sleep with common people. I wanna sleep with common people like you. What else? I said, oh, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I had to start somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you got no money. And she just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah. I can't see anyone else smiling. Are you sure? You wanna live like common people. You wanna see whatever common people see.
sleep, want to sleep with common people. You want to sleep with common people like me. But she didn't understand. And she just smiled and held my hand. I went to flash above the shop. I cut your hair and get a job. I smoked some facts and play some pool. Pretend you never went to school. Still you never get it right. It's when you're late in bed at night, watching roaches climb the wall. If you called your dad, he could stop it. Oh yeah.
That introduction, of course, was entirely fictional. No tourists arrived at Pack and Save today, and Cinder Hill doesn't exist. But everything those imagined tourists just did. Photographing, the interrupting, narrating a stranger's shopping trolley like it was an exhibit happens for real every day. Happens for real every day in three real neighbourhoods we're about to take you to. Today, our song today, Common People by Pulp. Jarvis Cocker wrote Common People about a real conversation. An art school classmate from Serious Money who told him she wanted to live like ordinary working people just to see what it was like. The song was his furious answer that poverty isn't a costume you try on for an afternoon and take off the moment it stops being interesting. Tonight's episode sits on a spectrum. At one end, the voyeuristic detached tourism we just dramatised. Visitors treating a stranger's ordinary life as content with no relationship to the place beyond the price of the ticket. At the other end, families in some of the most written about, least understood and poverty-stricken neighbourhoods on earth surviving and very often thriving on nothing but ingenuity, creativity and sheer resilience. We are talking about slum tourism. The idea is older than any of us. Wealthy Victorian Londoners used to tour the slums of Whitechapel and Spitalfields for exactly the same reason people book a Dharavi walking tour today, and dressed up, depending who you ask, as either education or entertainment. The modern version starts in Rio de Janeiro's favelas in the early 1990s, spreads to Mumbai after a Hollywood film we'll go to shortly, and by the 2000s has taken hold in Nairobi's Kibera, and everywhere it appears, it splits opinion down the middle. One side calls it poverty turned into a theme park ride, income for nobody, dignity for nobody, a camera pointed at somebody else's hardship. The other side says it's often the only tourism revenue these communities get to control on their own terms, and that refusing to look is just a more comfortable way of pretending these places and the millions of people in them don't exist. We're not going to resolve that argument for you today. And we'd be suspicious of anybody who claimed they could. What we can do is take you to three of the most visited informal settlements on the planet, show you exactly what's happening on the ground in each one, and let you weigh it up for yourself. In this episode, we visit Rio de Janeiro's favelas. Then we travel to Dharavi and the million people squeezed into a square mile of one Mumbai suburb. Then to Kibera, a suburb of Nairobi, where there might be 200,000 people, or there might be a million. No one knows.
She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College, that's where I... loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have room Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And then in 30 seconds time, she said, I wanna live like common people. I wanna do whatever common people do.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And then in 30 seconds time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. And so we're in Rio de Janeiro, the favelas. It's worth understanding why these hillsides became tourist attractions in the first place. And it's not a flattering reason. Many of Rio's favelas sit on some of city's best real estate, steep hillsides with sweeping ocean views that would command enormous prices anywhere else, occupied for over a century by the people the former city had nowhere else to put. That history is exactly what most Jeep Tour commentary leaves out. These aren't just poor neighbourhoods in the abstract. They're the direct result of a housing system that pushed people uphill and then, decades later, discovered the view was worth selling tickets to. Favela tours in Rio go back to the early 1990s when foreign-run companies started driving Jeep convoys through hillside communities, not unlike the introduction we had at Pack and Save. A quick loop, cameras out the window, no local guide, no local income, no one from the neighbourhood involved in the telling at all. One Rio-based commentator has called these tours human zoos. Today, Vito Lira from the favela runs a historic tour, one of a growing number of guides who actually live in the community. They're showing you around. Further along in Rocinha, Latin America's largest favela, a resident-led walking tour today might stop at a family-run shop for cold drinks, pause while local kids play drums for a few coins, and finish at a small gallery selling prints made by people who actually live there. None of this is charity. It's small business and small culture, the same instinct for turning limited resources into a livelihood that runs through everything else we're hearing about today. As we move to Mumbai, Dharavi, and a neighbourhood most of the world only heard of because of a movie. In 2008, Danny Boyle's Slumdog Millionaire. But here's what the film left out almost entirely and what any honest tour has to lead with instead. Dharavi is one of the most productive square kilometres in Asia, considered an actual slum. It was the centre of Slumdog Millionaire. Estimates put its informal economy at well over $1 billion a year. Recycling, leather tanning, pottery, garment making, bakeries, supplying goods across Mumbai. Entire family trades have run for generations out of workshops the size of a suburban garage. If you want to see necessity, actually recycling units employing thousands of workers process plastic, aluminium and cardboard collected from across the city, sorting and reprocessing what the rest of Mumbai has already decided is worthless. It's genuinely one of the most sophisticated informal economies on the planet, run without a single MBA anywhere in the building, and yet the slum tourists would miss it all.
I said, pretend you got no money. And she just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah. I can't see anyone else smiling. Are you sure? You wanna live like common people? You wanna see whatever common people see? Wanna sleep with common people? You wanna sleep with common people like me? But she didn't understand. And she just smiled.
You want to live like common people. You want to see whatever common people see. You want to sleep with common people. You want to sleep with common people like me. But she didn't understand. She just smiled and held my hand. Rent a flat above a shop. Get your hair and get a job. Smoke some fags and play some pool. Pretend you never went to school. But still, you'll never get it right. Because when you're laid in bed at night watching cockroaches climb the wall, if you called your dad, he could stop it all. Which is exactly what it is for the tourists. And that's the real sting behind Common People. Underneath the guitar hooks, it was never really about poverty itself. It's about the fact that someone with an exit can choose to visit poverty as entertainment. Take the photo and go home unchanged. In Rockina, at least, some of that money now stays with the people running the tour. Not just the people who sold the ticket. Back in whatever city the visitor flew in from. Reality Tours and Travel, the company most associated with Dharavi Tours today, started in 2005 by Chris Way, a Brit living in Mumbai, and a local, Krishna Pujari. The business now puts up to 80% of its after-tax profits into a community school teaching English and computer skills. And when journalists accused the tours of being voyeuristic a few years ago, Chris Way's response was to introduce a no-photography policy on the walks. He'd seen the press photos of his own customers taking pictures and decided that critics had a point. Our third stop is Kibera in Nairobi, one of Africa's largest informal settlements, home to anywhere between 200,000 and well over a million people, depending on whose estimate you trust, but just nobody knows. Some tours here follow almost exactly the same split as Rio and Mumbai. Celestine Awino, who moved to Kibera in search of opportunity, has described the shock of being followed by camera-carrying visitors and put the criticism about it as bluntly as it gets. This is not a national park, she said. We are not wildlife. You'll never live like common people. You'll never do whatever common people do. You'll never fail like common people. That's a critical one. You'll never fail like common people. You'll never watch your life slide out of view and then dance and drink and screw. And because there's nothing else to do, sing along with the common people. Sing along and it might just get you through. Laugh along with the common people, laughing along even though they're laughing at you and the stupid things you do because you think that poor is cool. So we walk along the streets of a resident-run company like Kibera Experience, and you might meet a woman who wakes before dawn every day to bake mandazi, Swahili donuts, turning a little flour and oil into a business that feeds her own children. You might visit a woman's collective making jewellery out of recycled materials, a youth-run film studio making documentaries that push directly back against the stereotypes slum tourism itself can end up reinforcing. Rooftop vegetable gardens, solar panels rigged from scrap parts. None of it is what this word slum prepares a visitor to expect. Women's savings groups, often called chamas, pool small weekly contributions to fund each other's businesses in rotation, one member at a time. An entirely informal banking system built because the informal one was never available to begin with. So you step back. We step back from all three neighbourhoods for a moment, and a pattern is impossible to miss. Dharavi's billion-dollar recycling and manufacturing economy. Rosinha's family shops and artist-run galleries. Kibera's home bakeries, jewellery collectives, and solar rigs built from parts other people threw away. None of this was seeded by outside investment or government programmes. It was built brick by brick and dollar by dollar by people with almost nothing else available to build it with. From a hillside in Rio to 2 square kilometres in Mumbai to the dirt streets of Kibera, people are not waiting around to be rescued or gawked at through a bus window. They're people who've had to think every single day, because thinking was the one resource nobody could ever take away from them. So the next time we're in a McDonald's, can we imagine that that's the next stop from that imaginary tourist group that visited Pack and Save? And they're in there with their cameras and their, which of course record everything that is spoken. And they're coming up and they're asking you, what type of meal are you going to choose? And why did you choose the orange juice instead of the Coca-Cola? Because that's Coca-Cola's a meal for a popular one. And people are taking photos of you eating that burger. And then you go to fill up. You're in a petrol station. And the tourist group arrives at this very unusual place. Why are you choosing the green pipe? And how do you pay for this? How do you know how much to put in, and how far will this take you, and why do you actually use a car? Why don't you catch the bus or walk? This episode does not intend to discourage you from ever going on holiday. Instead, it asks 2 questions. How would I respond to my life being treated like an amusement arcade or a theme park? And how would I like to be treated by a passing tourist who is curious about my everyday lifestyle? Thanks very much for being with us. This has been Earth Echoes of Dissent, and the episode has been about slum tourism and the ingenuity, the resilience, the compassion that you will find in every community, and especially in the slum communities where people are producing, thinking, and toiling away without external support. This episode is available on podcast, on your go-to media platform, or freefm.org.nz and accessmedia.nz. Next week, tourism and sacred sites, from Uluru to Mount Sinai, from Bolivia's Tiwanaku to Mauna Kea in Hawaii. And our song, our track will be Warriors Rising from Mauna Kea in Hawaii. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.